The Haunted Man, The Gift Bestowed. Everybody said so. Far be it from me to assert that what everybody says must be true. Everybody is often as likely to be wrong as right. In the general experience, everybody has been wrong so often, and it has taken in most instances such a wary while to find out how wrong, that authority is proved to be fallible. Everybody may sometimes be right, but that's no rule, as the ghost of Giles Scroggins says in the ballad. The dread word ghost recalls me. Everybody said he looked like a haunted man. The extent of my present claim for everybody is that they were so far right. He did. Who could have seen his hollow cheeks, his sunken, brilliant eye, his black-attired figure, indefinably grim, although well-knit and well-proportioned, his grizzled hair hanging like tangled seaweed about his face, as if he had been through his whole life a lonely mark for the chafing and beating of the great deep of humanity, but might have said he looked like a haunted man? Who could have observed his manner, taciturn, thoughtful, gloomy, shadowed by habitual reserve, retiring always, and jocund never, with a distraught air of reverting to a bygone place and time, or of listening to some old echoes in his mind, but might have said it was the manner of a haunted man? Who could have heard his voice, slow-speaking, deep and grave, with a natural fullness and melody in it, which he seemed to set himself against and stop, but might have said it was the voice of a haunted man? Who that had seen him in his inner chamber, part library and part laboratory? For he was, as the world knew, far and wide a learned man in chemistry, and a teacher whose lips and hands a crowd of aspiring ears and eyes hung daily. Who that had seen him there upon a winter night, alone, surrounded by his drugs and instruments and books? The shadow of his shaded lamp, a monstrous beetle on the wall, motionless among a crowd of spectral shapes, raised there by the flickering of the fire upon the quaint objects around him. Some of these phantoms, the reflection of glass vessels that held liquids, trembling at hearts like things that knew his power to uncombine them, and to give back their component parts to fire and vapour. Who that had seen him then, his work done? And he, pondering in his chair before the rusted grate and red flame, moving his thin mouth as if in speech, but silent as the dead, would not have said that the man seemed haunted, and the chamber too. Who might not, by a very easy flight of fancy, have believed that everything about him took this haunted tone, and that he lived on haunted ground? His dwelling was so solitary and vault-like, an old retired part of an ancient endowment for students, once a brave edifice planted in an open place, but now the obsolete whim of forgotten architects, smoke-aged and weather-darkened, squeezed on every side by the overgrowing of the great city, and choked like an old well with stones and bricks, its small quadrangles lying down in very pits formed by the streets and buildings, which, in course of time, had been constructed above its heavy chimney-stacks, its old trees insulted by the neighbouring smoke, which deigned to droop so low when it was very feeble and the weather very moody, its grass plots struggling with the mildewed earth to be grass or to win any show of compromise, its silent pavement unaccustomed to the tread of feet and even to the observation of eyes, except when a stray face looked down from the upper world, wondering what nook it was, its sundial in a little bricked-up corner, where no sun had straggled for 100 years, but where, in compensation for the sun's neglect, the snow would lie for weeks when it lay nowhere else, and the black east wind would spin like a huge humming-top, when in all other places it was silent and still. His dwelling at its heart and core, within doors, at his fireside, was so lowering and old, so crazy yet so strong, with its worn-eaten beams of wood in the ceiling and its sturdy floor shelving downward to the great oak chimney-piece, so environed and hemmed in by the pressure of the town, yet so remote in fashion, age and custom, so quiet, Yet so thundering with echoes when a distant voice was raised or a door was shut, echoes not confined to the many low passages and empty rooms, but rumbling and grumbling till they were stifled in the heavy air of the forgotten crypt where the Norman arches were half buried in the earth. And you should have seen him in his dwelling about twilight, in the dead winter time, when the wind was blowing shrill and shrewd, with the going down of the blurred sun, when it was just so dark as that the forms of things were indistinct and big, but not wholly lost, when sitters by the fire began to see wild faces and figures, mountains and abysses, ambuscades and armies in the coals, when people in the streets bent down their heads and ran before the weather, when those who were obliged to meet it were stopped at angry corners, stung by wandering snowflakes alighting on the lashes of their eyes, which fell too sparingly and were blown away too quickly to leave a trace upon the frozen ground, when windows of private houses closed up tight and warm, when lighted gas began to burst forth in the busy and the quiet streets, fast blackening otherwise,